May it please the court, my honorable opponent, I'm Blaine Myrie, counsel for defendant appellant Alonzo Moore. Mr. Moore is serving a life sentence for first-degree murder and a conviction that was final in September of 2002. Within a few weeks after that conviction was final, when the Supreme Court denied cert, Mr. Moore filed a pro se 35C motion in which he raised issues of ineffective assistance of counsel and violation of his Sixth Amendment right to conflict-free counsel. To date, however, the district court has never addressed the merits of those claims. Now, as we noted in our brief, there was a history of correspondence or pleadings filed by Mr. Moore that the district court took various responses to, but it's clear that the district court never did a few things. It never ordered a hearing on Mr. Moore's 35C motion, never ordered a response from the people to address the merits of the claims. The district court never addressed the claims on their merits, and the court never issued an order that clearly and unequivocally denied Moore's 35C motion.
Mr. Myrie, why isn't the March 6, 2008 order of the court a denial of that motion?
Your Honor, the March 6, 2008 order says that it was in response to a letter that Mr. Moore had written. After a series of letters, responses, and pleadings, Mr. Moore wrote a letter saying that he had not received a final order on his 35C motion, and he requested that order. And it appears from the pleadings it was his understanding that the motion had already been denied. And I think that's a fair reading based on what the court had said on both September 19th, 2007 and February 20th, 2008, which is pages 478 and 480 of the record, where the court twice indicated that Mr. Moore, his motion had previously been denied on various grounds, and also that he was stopped, a collateral estoppel, from further attacking his motion. So Mr. Moore filed this letter with the court asking for some sort of order, and what the court sent was a response on the bottom of the letter that read, "No order ever entered denying defendant's 35C motion. Since defendant's 35C defendant's conviction was already affirmed on appeal, and issues raised in the motion were not raised during appeal, therefore, motion deemed denied by operation of law." That is not a clear and unequivocal denial of the 35C motion. It's unclear what the court meant when it said that. It's not a. It doesn't say, "I'm denying today your 35C motion." I think you can fairly read that response as saying, in response to Mr. Moore's request that for the order, the court is saying, "No order ever issued, but your motion's already been deemed denied by operation of law." I don't view that as, and I don't think that it's a proper reading of it to say that that is a final order addressing the 35C motion.
But do you agree, though, that if we find that the deemed denied by operation of law was a denial of his 35C motion, that in that case his time to appeal that would have already elapsed?
Certainly, if the court construes the March 6, 2008 order to be a final appealable order, then certainly Mr. Moore did not appeal within that time. But I think that the court needs to look at the Blecker case that I cited in our reply brief that talks about what how to construe an ambiguous court order. And I would say that this order on March 6th is very ambiguous. The appellate court should, and I'm quoting the Supreme Court, construe an ambiguous order to arrive at a result that is as fair and reasonable as possible rather than one that is harsh and unreasonable. Now, it's clear that when Mr. Moore got this order, that he responded the following month in a way that did not that looks like he did not believe this to be a final order, because at page 484 of the record, he sent a letter that's dated March 6, 2008, but I think the record is pretty clear that it was actually April 6, 2008 when it was sent. If you look at page 485 of the record, the prison received it on 4-6, and also the district court filed it on April 8, 2008. But in any event, in that letter, Mr. Moore again is saying, "I have never received any official order from this court in order that I may seek an appeal from the denial. Would you please look at my file and determine if there's been an order for my post-conviction 35C, and if so, could you forward me the order? So the effect of the March 6, 2008 order is to create further confusion. It's not compared, it's not an order that is clear and unequivocal, unlike the July 2009 order in which Judge Krockenberg denied the second 35C petition. That clearly was an order. It's captioned order. It is clear and unequivocal in its denial of the second 35C petition as a successive petition. The March 6, 2008 order, however, is not. It doesn't say it's an order denying the 35C motion. It's not on a separate document. It's not captioned order. It does not clearly say when the motion was deemed denied by operation of law. It does not cite any legal authority one way or the other. It does not address any of the merits of the claim, and it simply signed D.A. Cole. The judge didn't even indicate that he was the district judge on the case, which I think at least has some relevance because the letter itself from Mr. Moore on which this order was written was a letter directed to the clerk of the district court and not to Judge Cole himself. So if you compare the two orders, the March 6, 2008 order with the July 2009 order, it's really night and day in my view. One is clear. It gives notice to everybody, the defendant and all counsel, that the petition is being denied. The March 6, 2008 order does not. And because it's an ambiguous order, this court should apply the rule of construction set forth in the Blecker case, which says that the court should construe it to arrive at a fair and just result. And in these circumstances, where Mr. Moore repeatedly over the years asked the court to give him the status of his 35C petition, and in which the district court continually failed to do so. And in fact, at one point in 2004, went so far as to say, I have no intention of being Mr. Moore's pen pal. I think the fair and just result under the rule of construction is that the order is ambiguous and therefore does not constitute an order denying the original 35C petition.
Look at the order in terms of, I mean, we have to look at it on an objective basis as opposed to a subjective basis. Would you agree with that, Mr. Moore?
Correct, but it also has to be looked at in the context of the entire record.
I mean, this letter or the order that we're talking about, the March 6th document, comes in response to Mr. Moore's request, specific request, for a final order.
Mr. Moore's request was for a final order, but I think if you also look at Mr. Moore's letter, he is indicating that it was his understanding that he had not received a final order. If you look at his February letter, he references a 35C motion being denied previously. And I think if you look at the two previous statements that the court had made in February of 2008 and September 2007, where the court had made the reference to that it had denied the 35C motion previously, and that at least suggests that the order predates March 6, 2008. And if you look again at what Mr. Moore wrote in April of 2008, which is a page 484 of the record, Mr. Moore writes, apparently on October 12, 2002, this court issued an order denying relief. So Mr. Moore's under the impression that it's the October 2002 order, which doesn't exist.
Well, the court also said, though, in its response, no order ever entered denying his motion. So if there was confusion about whether the court had done so or not, doesn't that clear it up? Doesn't the court acknowledge saying, I was wrong if you've ever interpreted my prior orders as saying we denied your motion or I denied your motion?
Had the court said the motion is hereby denied today or something to that effect, I would agree. But I don't agree because what the court actually says is motion deemed denied by operation of law. It doesn't say when it was deemed denied. It doesn't use a verb to say the motion is denied today by operation of law.
Wouldn't a reasonable person looking at that say, okay, even if I had nothing before this, it says deemed denied by operation of law, my appellate rights, I got to appeal. He asked for the final order so he could appeal. So he must have known something about timeframes for doing so, mustn't he?
Well, and I think he did. And in fact, if you look at the fact that in after receiving the July 2009 order denying the second petition, he did file within 30 days. He filed his notice of appeal within 30 days. And I think that points up the ambiguity in the court's order. Had the court said no order entered previously denying the 35C motion, and it's whatever language you wanted to use, the motion is denied today. That would have been clear and unambiguous. But I think in the context of what the court has done here, the court has said, in essence, in response to a request for the final order, no order ever entered since defendant's conviction was already affirmed on appeal and issues raised in motion were not raised during appeal. Motion deemed denied by operation of law. I think a fair reading of that is no order has to enter because of these two things. It's already been deemed denied by operation of law. And in light of what Mr. Moore says, he could be looking backwards, and I think a reasonable person could look backwards and say, well, in light of this record where the court has said it's denied it in the past, but then says it no order ever entered, a reasonable person could take that to mean that it's deemed denied by operation of law, but no order has to enter. So I think in these circumstances, and it is an odd case, I will say that, particularly given the long delays, but I think applying the Blecker case to this order, the court needs to construe it in a way that allows Mr. Moore's appeal to go forward, because I think the order is susceptible to ambiguity.
What's the relevance, if any, in our analysis of this issue of this 2007 letter that the psychologist sends into the court, basically saying Mr. Moore does not understand anything that's going on and he needs a lawyer?
Well, I think that suggests that the need for clarity was probably greater here than it was in other cases. First, he didn't have counsel appointed. He was doing this pro se. Second, he was at San Carlos to begin with. A psychologist is saying that because of his traumatic brain injury, he has difficulty reading, writing, and comprehending. I think that at least plays into the notion that this order could be construed to be ambiguous. So I think it does have some relevance. It certainly has some relevance to Mr. Moore's condition and how he approached these. I mean, his pleadings were filed with the assistance of jailhouse lawyers because as you can see from some of the signatures of Mr. Moore's, he can barely write. So I think that since the order is ambiguous, it should be construed as not having been a final appealable order, and therefore the 35C petition, the original one, should still be pending, in which case the second petition was not a successive petition under the Walker case, and we'd ask the court to reverse and remand for the court to appoint counsel, have an evidentiary hearing, and address these petitions on their merit. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Rohrbaugh, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. The relevant portion of CRIM P35C provides that a court shall deny any claim that was raised and resolved in a prior post-conviction proceeding. This language was enacted in 2004. Two important things about it are, first of all, that the language is mandatory. Second of all, I would note, it does not include any sort of requirement that the prior ruling be on the merits. It just says that it has to have been raised and ruled on. This case does have an unfortunate set of events between 2002 and 2007. Certainly the defendant's behavior was admirable to the extent that he persistently asked the court about the status of his motion, and he then, upon being told in 2007 his motion had been denied, he then went about trying to get a copy because he apparently knew that he needed a copy in order to appeal. So there appears to have been some ambiguity between September 2007 and March of 2008 when he was trying to get a copy of the order from the trial court. However, in March of 2008, the trial court issued this order saying, therefore, the motion deemed denied by operation of law. So to the extent that there had been some ambiguity, I think it's now clear that the defendant's motion has been denied. Whether or not it had been denied previously, and he might, I suppose, out of an abundance of caution, have decided to file an appeal in 2007, the trial court's order makes it clear both that no previous order had issued and also that his post-conviction motion was being denied. Now, the defendant then had 45 days to appeal this order, and he did not do so. He now, in this appeal, asked this court to consider the propriety of the 2008 denial. But the time for that is past, and I don't think it's proper this court to reach back and re-examine the 2008 order. Now, the defendant has cited the Walker case. And I have a couple of thoughts about the Walker case. The first is that it was decided before the successive petitions language was added to Crim P 35C in 2004. So, you know, arguably it doesn't apply anymore because we now have the mandatory successive petitions language. The other thing is simply that I would disagree with the Walker panel in reaching back to re-examine prior 35C denial. I think that goes against the principles of jurisdiction. I also think it goes against the principles that, in fact, an order denying a motion is an order denying a motion, that sometimes we think trial courts should make better findings and conclusions in denying an motion. And of course, that's subject to appellate review where the defendant appeals. But it seems wrong to go back and decide it after the fact. Finally, I would note with regard to the Walker case, it would seem to be factually different because in that case, the trial court made comments which appeared to directly address one of two claims raised in the post-conviction motion, but not the other. And we don't have that sort of thing happening here. We don't have a particular claim being denied while others are not mentioned. What we have is a statement, motion deemed denied by operation of law. So it appears to be clearly denying every claim in the motion.
I want to ask you a question about that to make sure I understand exactly what your argument is. Is it your argument that the March 6, 2008 order was unambiguous in saying that the motion was denied on that date but had not been denied prior to that date?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the language of the March 2008 order is unambiguous.
In denying the motion that day, but not earlier.
Right, because it said no order ever issued. But it says, therefore, motion deemed denied by operation of law. So I think it's clear that it's denied at that point. It's unfortunate that there, as I said, had been some ambiguity up to that point with the trial court apparently believing that it had already denied the defendant's motion and that some order existed. But it's very, very clear from this March 2008 order that there was no previous order and that the defendant's motion was denied. I have no other comments. Does this court have questions?
So I do. It seems like the defendant is taking every conceivable action he can to get the trial court to rule on his motion, and he's gotten some responses or gotten copies of responses that would help him not a whit. In fact, he seems to have been under the impression, and I think any reasonable person before this order issued would say, well, where's the order? What's going on? I don't understand. What am I supposed to do? Mr. Myrie argues that those circumstances coupled with his letters after this order issued make this ruling ambiguous. Why is that not at least a tenable argument?
No, Your Honor, I certainly would agree, and I think I've said before, the defendant's persistence here was admirable. I mean, clearly, his motion languished for almost 5 years, which should not have happened. And then, clearly, he got many ambiguous responses between September of 2007 and March of 2008. But I think, as I said, that the language of the 2008 order is clear, and it clears up the ambiguity of the prior 6 months or so. I think the defendant's subsequent communications with the court would be a matter of his subjective understanding, perhaps. But I think that we apply an objective understanding. And I think looking at this from an objective point of view, that in fact, the language is clear that you should be appealing this now. This is a final appealable order.
Construing this order in defendant's favor because he was pro se at the time. We've had a couple of cases from the Colorado Supreme Court citing the Haynes case and others that seem to be indicating we're supposed to be construing these pro se pleadings and responses thereto more in defendant's favor than we have been. What's your position on that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the various statements that we do hear saying pro se pleadings are to be construed liberally have to do with the contents of the pleadings and the sorts of claims being raised. I don't think it applies to the procedure involved, and I think that we hold the defendant to the same standard as counsel in having to file his notice of appeal if he wants review of an adverse ruling. So I don't think that this idea of pro se pleadings being liberally construed extends as far as excusing his failure to follow the procedural requirements for review of the trial court's order.
That all depends on whether we construe the court's order, not the defendant's various communications, as ambiguous or unambiguous.
Yes.
If it's unambiguous, you're probably right. If it's ambiguous, it seems to me he gets a shot at getting this motion ruled on.
Well, Your Honor, that is the issue before this court, which is, did a final appealable order enter denying his first post-conviction motion? That's absolutely the issue before this court.
If we set aside the alleged ambiguity, is there any other basis or any support in the record to find that there was excusable neglect in his late filing for the, to appeal that first 35C?
Well, I don't think there has ever been a notice of appeal filed with regard to the first 35C denial, right? So I don't think that there was an attempt ever to do a late filing, and I believe that the 45-day rule applies. Now, there is other law that says that the 45 days may be excused for another 30 days upon, I believe it's a finding of good cause, but jurisdictionally, the review process ends after 75 days. So I don't think it's a matter of appealing the 35C. The question arises, is there excusable neglect or justifiable excuse? We apply justifiable excuse and excusable neglect in saying, should this be properly considered in a time-barred motion or a successive motion? So I think that's a separate legal doctrine. I don't think that excusable neglect or justifiable excuse would apply to the failure to appeal this order. The failure to appeal this order, as I said, the defendant's own letter indicates that he knows he has to appeal, and he's trying to get a copy of the order, and I think the order itself says, this is the order, go to it. If this court has no other questions, I thank you for your time and attention. I'd ask you to affirm the trial court's order.
Your Honors, in looking at the ambiguity of the March 2008 order, One analogy you could look at is to the civil side, and Rule 59 of the state rules, which the state rules of civil procedure, which has in it a provision that deems motions denied 60 days after they're filed, whether they've been ruled on or not. And the thing I've mulled over in my mind is that what if a judge had issued an order in a civil case, you know, well after the 60 days had expired, and said motion deemed denied by operation of law? Well, that order would not trigger a new 45-day notice period. It's the law that puts the deadline in place. And so the language, motion denied by operation of law, suggests that the law, in an abstract sense or in a concrete sense in the case of Rule 59, because of certain things in Mr. Moore's motion, deemed the motion denied without the court ever having to intervene to enter an order. And I think that suggests that there is ambiguity in what the court did, because the court is not clearly making a ruling in its March 2008 order that I, as the district court judge, am entering an order today denying your motion. I'm merely commenting on the reasons why no order has entered. So with that, I think that the order does become ambiguous, and because of that needs to be construed under the Blecker case in a fair or a just and as reasonable manner as possible, which in this case would allow Mr. Moore to proceed with his 35C motion. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.